Resilient Cyber Podcast brings you conversations from diverse cybersecurity professionals, ranging from executives, subject matter experts, and aspiring entrants. Today's diverse threat landscape requires systems that can withstand a variety of cyber incidents, remaining trustworthy and secure.
Resilient Cyber is sponsored by Acquia, a cybersecurity service, disabled veteran-owned small business that is passionate about enabling innovation and driving secure digital transformation. Acquia believes in guardrails over roadblocks and security as a business and mission enabler. Learn more at acquia.us. That's A-Q-U-I-A.us. Before we start the episode, we want to give a big thank you to our season 4 sponsor, Nucleus Security. Meet Nucleus, the only risk-based vulnerability management platform purpose-built for the world's most complex enterprises. Nucleus takes the mountain of vulnerability data that is produced by your security stack and unifies it into one clean dashboard that helps you make sense of your assets and vulnerabilities. With Nucleus, users get a normalized and deduplicated list of vulnerabilities across network devices, cloud, applications, and more. Next, we layer in risk and vulnerability intelligence from sources like Mandiant to help you prioritize the vulnerabilities that matter most. Ready to see how Nucleus can help improve your vulnerability management program? Head to nucleussec.com today.
Thank you for joining the Resilient Cyber Show. My name is Chris Hughes, along with my co-host, Dr. Nikki Robinson.
Hey, everybody.
And today we're joined by Alfredo Hickman. Alfredo, thanks for being here, man.
Oh, thanks so much, Chris. Thanks so much, Nikki. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, definitely. We're really excited to chat with you, man. But for folks that don't know you or haven't, you know, followed any of your content or anything yet, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're up to right now?
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Alfredo Hickman. I lead our information security program, GRC and IT at Obsidian Security. Obsidian Security is a cloud SaaS security, comprehensive SaaS security platform, secure all of the major SaaS applications from a threat management, integration risk management, posture compliance perspective. I've been with the company now for almost 5 years. Prior to that, I led security product engineering at Rackspace, where I was responsible for helping to build our global managed security services portfolio. I'm a veteran, United States Marine Corps infantry, spent a number of deployments overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan, and spent some time in Washington, D.C. working on national cybersecurity policy.
Very cool. So first off, appreciate, thank you for your service. And I think it's fascinating. I was talking to someone else about this. I just got back from RSA last week. And I think I mentioned this last week on the episode that we did is like, there's so many veterans in cybersecurity. It's really, really fascinating that we all kind of find our way to cybersecurity. So I want to ask you, we've talked about, your work at Obsidian and SaaS security. We've had other folks on like, Jerick Beeson, who's talked about SaaS security and, we always wonder, like in the context of, cloud security in terms of an industry, we always seem to overlook SaaS security. Why is that, despite the pervasive use of SaaS, that it doesn't really get discussed when we talk about cloud security?
Yeah, man, that's a really good question, Chris. And this is a question that I was asking myself back in 2017. So I was working on a managed security portfolio and, Rackspace, big cloud company, we were working with Amazon, Microsoft, Google to kind of deploy managed services on their infrastructures as a lot of our customers were embarking on their digital transformation and migrating to cloud. And I think for a lot of us, both on the services side as well as our enterprise customers, we were really familiar or at least comfortable with kind of evolving our thinking processes from a security and governance perspective from on-prem into cloud infrastructures. A lot of the operations, were analogous, the tool sets we kind of adapted, and from a governance controls, it was sort of familiar, right? We still controlled the infrastructures for the most time. We could deploy our tooling sets. Our operations teams kind of ran those configurations and everything. And there was a common shared security responsibility model that was easy to digest, right? The cloud services providers or the infrastructure providers were responsible for security of the cloud. We were responsible for security in the cloud. We understood that pretty well. With SaaS applications, it was kind of all over the place, right? Each SaaS application kind of had its own security capability set. Some was a little bit more evolved than others. Some was completely non-existent. None of them were great. those SaaS applications typically weren't managed and administered, you know, by central IT teams or central security teams or central organizations. They were distributed all over the place, right? HR, finance, FinOps, IT, engineering, whatever. Everybody had their own SaaS applications and they kind of managed them themselves or some shared pooling of resources and the like, but they were proliferated kind of all over the place, right? Distributed. So it's very difficult to kind of throw a lasso around that and start bringing it in to like a central administrative organization or something like that. So security oftentimes, you know, was a real afterthought, right?
Yeah, I think you hit it both from the organizational perspective in the sense that it's, you know, it's distributed in the sense like you don't have a cloud team that's managing, you know, the IaaS environment like you do with SaaS. Like I should say with IaaS, you have a cloud team, for example, that's managing the environment or something like that, or security or ops or so on. With SaaS, it's more pervasive, a lot of business units consuming it, you know, and you don't really know what's even being used. Like, you know, if you're deploying workloads in AWS, you're pretty aware of that. If you're using, you know, 150 different SaaS applications across your entire enterprise, it's very difficult to know that sometimes without, you know, appropriate tooling and processes and so on. And then also on the practitioner side of things, it's very difficult because if I want to become an expert in AWS or Azure security, there's codified career paths to go out and do that. You know, solution architect, security, there's study guides, you know, there's practice exams. But if I want to become an expert in SaaS security, well, there's hundreds or thousands of SaaS apps. I can't possibly know them all their nuanced configurations and settings and things like that, you know? Another aspect that makes SaaS security kind of challenging is you start to get this kind of spider web of integrations, you know, among the SaaS providers, between each other, to your enterprise environments, to your cloud environment, you know, things like that. What are some of the risks or concerns when we think about the third-party SaaS integrations and that kind of complex web that it creates?
You know, that's an excellent question. And from my perspective, kind of one of the most sensitive aspects of SaaS security is actually that sprawl of the integrations amongst the applications and kind of within the applications. These SaaS apps, right, they don't exist in isolation. Most of the big SaaS apps are robust platforms with their own marketplaces with dozens or hundreds of third-party integrations, each one of which, for the most part, you know, developed by its own third party with its own permissions requirements, data flows, and all sorts of things, right? So probably the speed and the ease of deploying those integrations, which is great from a value proposition perspective, is also really significant from a risk perspective, right? Very quickly, you can change the interconnected web of those SaaS applications via OAuth grants and integrations of new third-party integrations, right? So the permissions and who can make those changes. A lot of these third-party integrations, I mean, standard end consumers can click on an OAuth grant and then basically, boom, now you have a new relationship with a third party. Data is flowing, new permissions and exposures and surface area and the like is created. You know, we talked about the proliferation of the applications and who actually supports and owns those apps. Oftentimes, the administrators aren't your, you know, enterprise admins or your sanctioned admins. Oftentimes, those admins are somebody in a sales team or a marketing team or a FinOps team that was deemed the administrator for that instance of Salesforce or Slack or whatever, and they can make big integrations into those applications where now you have, you know, significant data flows and privacy and governance considerations and the like.
So what I'm hearing is identity and access management is a big concern because it is anytime you're connecting applications, whether that's SaaS and integrating them with anything else, it is. It's who has access to the data, how long do they need access to this application or to that? And by granting them access what else are we granting them access to, you know, without knowing or maybe not having that documented. So I think that's such a an important piece of what you were saying there. So Chris and I talk a lot about, you know, software security, software supply chain security. We talk about SBOMs. What does open source software look like? As someone who with your experience with SaaS and with software security, what are you most concerned about? Like what we talked a little bit about IAM, but do you have any other risks or things that you're concerned about when it comes to third-party risk?
Absolutely. I mean, so on the topic of SBOMs, right, the observability or at least the direct observation of composition of these systems is so critical. And in SaaS, you basically give that up, right? It very rarely outside of the context of like initial procurement due diligence where you might be able to request an SBOM or really get some insight into the composition of those SaaS applications from like a supply chain perspective, do you get any insight into the SaaS apps? And they're so dynamic. So it's changing all the time. So not being able to have direct observability into the composition really puts you at a disadvantage from a threat and vulnerability management perspective or a TPRM, third-party risk management perspective. It becomes even more critical for you to have some kind of visibility around what are these systems comprised of? How am I tracking any kind of exposures or vulnerabilities or threats to the composition of those systems? And what can I even do to manage that risk if we don't have some kind of comprehensive controls around that?
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about SaaS and how organizations are using it, right? You're typically not going to have just one. You might have multiple SaaS products in your environment and that may change over time, right? You know, you continue to need new functionality or new features. So what can you say or what do you think about how SaaS applies to not just the technical aspects of, you know, an organization or the risks, but the sort of the people aspect? How does that sort of integrate or work with the organization and the people that need to work together to do these integrations?
Yeah, those relationships become even more critical and kind of really being able to have clear lines of communication and governance controls around how you establish relationships with various organizations, business units, subsidiaries, all those kind of things to get a handle on those SaaS applications becomes even more critical, right? I think, you know, relationships are always critical. But in SaaS, because of the proliferation and where those systems live, you know, you not only have hundreds of particular of different SaaS applications, but you might also have dozens of variations of the SaaS of the same SaaS applications, entire instances that might live within different business units, subsidiaries, or whatever, right? So really being able to kind of from a cultural perspective, put in those behaviors or reinforce those behaviors that make people want to say, hey, I'm going to go and purchase this application. Let me make sure I'm syncing up with TPRM or whoever. Let me make sure that we can at least think through, you know, kind of what the implementation looks like. Who's going to own support and operations for these applications? What can we even do from a security best practices perspective? It becomes even more critical.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when we talked about, you know, when DevOps became a thing and DevSecOps became a thing, it was really because we needed to communicate, we needed to work better together, you know, between teams to say, okay, I'm not just going to develop this thing and throw it over the fence at operations and hope it works. I want to work together with developers and maybe infrastructure operations to make sure that what we're building, you know, sort of makes sense and works well together. And so it sounds sort of like SaaSOps, right? Like how do you actually integrate with other teams? Maybe we'll coin that phrase. We'll just coin that one here on the podcast.
SaaS ops. I dig it.
Yeah. So one more question before I take it back to Chris. When we're talking about sort of that integration, right? That sort of, especially when you have, like you're talking about hundreds, maybe a thousand different SaaS products or different tools that you need in your environment. When we're talking about that integration with the actual SaaS products and cloud infrastructure, what do you think about, we talked a little about the people aspect and the tooling aspect and some of the risk, but so now you've got this risk, you've got this sort of maybe potential really complex environment with IAM and third-party risk. How are you going to manage that risk? How do you work together to actually figure out what you've got and then manage it going forward?
That is such a sensitive topic. I mean, you know, you look at kind of like the evolution of, you know, what has happened in the SaaS security space, you know, initially kind of starting from a perimeter edge perspective with CASB, you know, you might home roll some stuff with SIEM and try to hook up to the APIs and pull that down. But, you know, I think it's a far more integrated approach in terms of like what you can do to get a handle of those applications. And I think, you know, governance, we hear the term a lot, shifting left in terms of trying to get at security risks as early as possible in the life cycle to treat them where it's cheaper, less disruptive, less stressful. Governance, in my opinion, from a SaaS security perspective, is about as shift left as you can. So really making sure that you have those governance controls around procurement, who has spend authorization, what do you do in order to approve a SaaS application as a sanctioned app, right, into your environment? Because a lot of these, to your points around identity and access management, a lot of these applications do integrate with on-prem infrastructures. I mean, your identity, another thing that was very common from a SaaS security perspective was, hey, let's just throw identity in front of it, like an Okta or something like that, so that we can get ahead of it from like an access management perspective. That is important. But these big identity providers like Microsoft and Azure and Azure AD, Okta, Ping, and everything else, they're SaaS applications as well. And we've seen this year, and you know, especially from H2 last year into this, a lot of those SaaS applications like Microsoft Azure AD or like M365 and Okta actually being direct targets for SaaS application exploitation. You compromise the identity provider, you compromise that M365 authentication services, and now you have access into on-prem infrastructures or into secrets and the like that are stored within those SaaS apps. And we see this all the time at Obsidian in a lot of the incident response engagements that we're involved in, where folks are compromising secrets and tokens and GitHub and on file shares and in Drive and Dropbox and the like to compromise on-prem infrastructures. So yeah, there's a lot of risk there.
Yeah, I was kind of nodding while you were saying things right there, because a few things jumped out at me. One is, I like how you applied the, you know, we see the concept of shift left in terms of the software development lifecycle. But in this case, we're not developing the software, we're consuming it. So you're trying to shift left in terms of your organizational processes and activities, like you said, integrating with procurement, acquisition, getting folks involved earlier in the lifecycle of consuming these SaaS apps. And another aspect I like that you pointed out is, like, while identity and identity as a service can provide some great capability around governance of these SaaS apps, those identity as a service providers are also SaaS providers who can ultimately be a target. And if they are compromised, that has a massive cascading impact across your entire ecosystem, basically. So I love that point you made there. One thing I wanted to bring up, too, is you talked about shift left. Another thing that we obviously hear a ton of lately is zero trust. But when we hear about zero trust, it's discussed in the context of our organization, our users, our devices, our applications. What do you think about zero trust in the SaaS paradigm, where it is an infrastructure we control? We don't control the endpoints. We didn't create the application. It's a much different paradigm.
It is a hugely different paradigm. I am a huge fan of the zero trust kind of philosophy. And when it comes to SaaS security, I don't know if it's impossible, but it is very, very difficult, right? Because there's almost an element of explicit trust when it comes to SaaS application. And that trust, at least the trust that we typically see via procurement due diligence and this kind of stuff, is typically done up front, right? From like a TPRM perspective, where folks are saying, hey, let me look at your vendor attestations and your SOC 2 and your ISO reports, and maybe, just maybe, you can provide an SFOM or something like that, and we get a good handle on what the risks are and if we're going to be able to trust you and all this kind of stuff. And then you implement the SaaS application, and then from there, it's kind of implicit trust off to the races, right? Very few, at least in our purview, from our perch at Obsidian, very rarely are organizations reevaluating trust on a regular basis, maybe yearly via renewal cycles and the like, but very rarely are they like explicitly assessing risk in a kind of regular cadence and frequency. So that's where I think having tooling, and I can speak to this a little bit here from an incident that I was involved in, where we had a third party relationship with an integration into Salesforce. Right, this organization, we had reviewed, we had a trusting relationship, we had reviewed their attestations and the reports, we've done a security and privacy review and everything else. We understood what the intended application of this application was supposed to be and the risks associated. Well, you know, as SaaS applications are highly dynamic by nature, this organization started engaging a third-party engineering firm offshore to do some legitimate engineering work. And now they had administrative access to access their customer applications in Salesforce for product development purposes, completely outside of the scope of any DPAs, any SOC 2 attestations or anything like that, you know, in terms of sanctioned practices. So it's one thing to be able to say, hey, I'm going to trust you this point in time via TPRM motion. It's another thing to have the tools to have that observability so that you can really see, hey, this trust is earned and renewed every day, or at least on a regular basis.
Yeah, I love what you point out there. A couple of things. First off is, you know, it's one thing to, you know, I guess, trust the third party, your SaaS provider. But as you point out, there's fourth and fifth and N tier providers that they're also using. And you generally don't have visibility of that. And then ultimately, like you said, there may be an initial level of assurance around reviewing compliance artifacts and things like that. But it's an ongoing situation where you need continuous monitoring and observability of those environments. When you're talking about compliance, configuration, security posture, the data that's in there, you know, who has access to it, and so on. You know, how do you see the space evolving when we think about, you talked about earlier how people can quickly create these third-party integrations via OAuth and other mechanisms, and often security and IT have no visibility or control of that. You know, from your experience and your team at Obsidian, you know, how are you guys helping tackle that for organizations that have all these third-party integrations using all these SaaS apps? You know, from a technological perspective, how are you guys starting to help folks get a handle on that?
Yeah. From a tech perspective, so I think there's probably at least two sides to this equation. I think there's a governance piece, and then I think there's a technical kind of technical controls capability set piece. At Obsidian, you know, we help with that latter equation. Having instrumentation in place that can, you know, in real time, empirically observe the SaaS applications and detect when new integrations are made and when those new third-party relationships or even fourth-party relationships are established, and understand who made the integration, what permissions are involved to what systems, you know, both on the sending and receiving side, right? And what is the purpose? Is this a sanctioned or non-sanctioned application? Is critical. These applications are so dynamic and integrations can come and go so quickly. Most of the time, they're coming and they're not going. At least from our vantage point, it's typically a massive accrual of integrations, some of them going silent and dormant over time, but very rarely actually being cleaned up. So having the technical tooling in place to see that, to observe that, and understand the context and the risk exposures is critical.
Yeah, I wanted to make one last quick comment from my end. It's funny how it reminds me of like access control for the individual. We all know the situation too well where, you know, Bob has worked at the organization for 15 years and seven different departments, and he starts to accrue all these permissions and access that never go back and get deprovisioned and cleaned up. And as you're pointing out, the same thing happens with SaaS integrations. You know, we start to have all these integrations, but we never go back and see, hey, are we still using this? Do we need to be integrated here? Do we need to, you know, give them access to our other SaaS apps or our environment or our data? So that's a critical point for sure.
Yeah, I think that's it's an important point when you're talking about attack surface too, right? So from a, not just from an IAM perspective, but if someone were to compromise this account, what do they have access to? How far can they go? Really, and what data can they access once they get there? So I think that's it's an interesting point. Well, I want to totally change gears. We're just going to go like way off, away from SaaS and software security, but I saw you posting recently about like exercise and fitness, and this is something that Chris and I talk about quite a bit too, the sort of balance of, you know, working really hard and the certifications and the education and the research and all the things that we do for our jobs, especially in cybersecurity, but also that balance of like physical and mental well-being. And so can you talk a little bit about, you know, sort of what fitness means to you and maybe mental health too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, I've always been a physically active person. I've been kind of involved in martial arts since I was a kid, and weight training and running and all these kind of things. And then in the military and the Marine Corps, that kind of reinforced that a lot. And I think, you know, for me, health, you know, kind of holistic health, mind, body and soul is critical in order for us to be able to perform at an optimal level, right? To be able to sustain ourselves, to push ourselves, to continue to study and to build and to do all these kind of things. I think it's all predicated on our health. At the end of the day, if we are not healthy, mind, body and soul, our quality of life, our work product, our relationships with our families and friends and everything else suffers. So, you know, if we don't take care of our health, it becomes difficult to impossible to take care of anything else. So I think, you know, investing in health, physical health, mental health, well-being, you know, those kind of things is critical for us to be kind of optimal and to have that longevity, sustainability from a personal perspective.
Agreed. It's one of those things I use as a tool to avoid burnout. You know, if I'm starting to feel burnout or starting to feel like, oh my gosh, I've got a million things in different directions, it's like, you know what? I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to go for a 4-mile run. I'm just going to like not think about it for a little bit. And that helps me to sort of avoid burnout. So I know for me, it's physical fitness is definitely an essential component. Well, before I take us to our last question, I wanted to ask you, is there anything you're working on? Where can people find you? Any current projects or anything you're doing that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have a lot of really exciting stuff going on at Obsidian. You know, we've been, for the last few years, it's kind of felt like, evangelizing in the wilderness, right? Trying to spread the SaaS security mission and the vision and the message and everything else. And, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, we have really started to gain a lot of traction here. So really focusing on the comprehensive SaaS security story, right? The market kind of latched itself around the SSPM vernacular around posture, SaaS security posture management, which is important, but posture is just one component of a comprehensive SaaS security capability. So at Obsidian, we've been really doubling down on what we think about from a comprehensive SaaS security posture, putting our a SaaS security perspective, posture piece, the threat management piece, integration, compliance, and all of these components. So we've been really doubling down on that stuff. Personally, I have a ton of really good stuff going on. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I've been starting to engage more kind of supporting Obsidian from a sales and marketing perspective. So getting our messaging out there and helping with those kind of efforts. So anybody here interested in connecting with me, I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you for that. All right. So that's going to take us to our last question. And based in your experience and expertise in all things SaaS and cybersecurity, what does cyber resilience mean to you?
Resilience. Cyber resilience. I kind of hearken that back to the philosophy that we had in the Marine Corps, right? As a tiny, scrappy organization, punching really, above our weight and everything else, but adapting and overcoming to the environment, right? Understanding who we are, understanding the adversary and the threat environment, and then adapting to ensure that our capability sets match and exceed those risks so that we can quickly take it, do them, right? Managing risk, being effective with that, and then recovering in the event of some kind of unforeseen situations and incidents and the like.
I love that response. I love that it's not just meeting, it's exceeding, right? It's about preparing for worst case scenario, right? If we think something really bad is going to happen, let's go above and beyond and make sure that we're prepared for that. So I love that. Well, I want to say a huge thank you, Alfredo, for joining us today, talking about all things SaaS. We covered fitness. We talked about cybersecurity and leadership. Like, we covered it all. So thank you so much for joining us this week. That's going to take us out this week, and we'll see everybody next Friday.
All right. Thanks, y'all.